Session number 14982, Mr. J. Brown, reel 7.
Mr. Brown, reel 7. You were in Maiden Newton, and you'd had this plane came down.
Yes, sir. We evacuated the plane site, got back into the village, say, and the training carried on as usual. And, you could get a bath there. It was good. It was only 100 yards from where we were under canvas, where there was someone sleeping in stables and a little bits round about the companies and that. But we had a big EPIP tent, like a marquee, and held our platoon. We were in there, like, and the weather was great, the food was canny, and there'd been a little, just on a small scale for the village, there'd been a, like, some kind of dairy establishment, and that would appear to be a stainless steel tub, about a yard high, about the size of this room, probably. And whether the milk had been in there and got churned into butter, I didn't know. But there was nothing in my way there. It was to fill that 3 parts full of water, and you could all jump in there, like, and we kept ourselves clean, like, that. That was good, like. I don't know if they used it for milk and butter after we'd gone, like, but imagine, probably.
How did you get on with the civilians around you?
Why, in that particular part of the world, they didn't avoid you, but they weren't friendly, you know. They really didn't. They wanted to keep you down. They realised you were there. They didn't want you in the village, like. It was a little village, like. They were content, you know. But at the beginning of the war, not retrack, and when we were at Charlbury, the people were so friendly, you know. Just sat in the other. It didn't happen there, mind. And it didn't happen there. That was in Dorset, wasn't it? Or Somerset. Is Yeovil in Somerset or Dorset? I bloody forget. Anyway, that was it. But they didn't go out the way to be nasty, you know. But there was a few pubs in that years. When you had the money, you frequented them, or you went for walks. You tried to tap the girls up, but they weren't having any, like, such as that. But anyway, we'd read down to training. And as I say, we'd got Spike Jennings, the Crindon Spike, I don't know why. Spike Jennings was RSM, and he was really sorting things out. There's one stupid thing happened there, as regards Major McLaren, like. It's hardly worth mentioning. But I was full corporal, and a full corporal does the duties as orderly sergeant, you know. He does orderly sergeant. The sergeant passed the book back, so the full corporal get more than a fair share. So what you do the night before, you look at battalion orders, part two. Tells you what's happening the next day, you see. So if there's anything orderly sergeant will do this, he'll do that, see. There was a bit of a scheme next morning, one of the rifle companies, and Major McLaren was running it, like. He was keen as mustard, give him his joe. But anyway, the orderly sergeant will detail a cyclist runner, see? So in all platoons, you get them sick heads and one thing and another. Bobby Story, sick as that wall. I says, oh, get down to the signal platoon now, get yourself a cycle. I says, tomorrow morning, report to McLaren. I says, 7, sharp. I says, you runner, cyclist runner. He had a bit of a, he said, can I ride a bike? I said, can I ride a bike? He said, well, he's 23. Well, I said, we're all day tomorrow to learn. But a bloody sod. He wheeled the bike down. Are you the runner? I imagine McLaren. Yeah, yes. He said, well, can I ride a bike? Who detailed you for the job? Why, Corporal Brown. Did you tell him he could? I said, yes. He said, I had all day today to learn. Why, instead of McLaren said he did the right thing, he put us on a charge. Why, you know. I mean, Vaid wouldn't have liked. He wouldn't have bothered that sort of thing. So, you march in, cap off, left, right. Wilston Active Service, you know, detailing that, What have you got to say, Corporal? Well, I said, like this, sir. I says, an able-bodied man at 23 years of age who says he can't ride a bike, is something wrong? He says, what if I tell you I can't ride a cycle? I have nothing to say, sir. Reprimand. Goes down on your crime sheet, reprimand, you know. I thought that was They're not worth talking about. There's nothing but stupid little things like, you know. He could have said, well, look, give it a bit of thought next time, mind it. You know, what is it? Give us a bloody reprimand. I thought, my God. But anyway, it's water off a duck's back. Them things didn't worry me at the time. And then we had our next big move. We had to take over a stretch of beach along Bridport, right along to Lyme Regis. You know, beautiful little coastline, that, you know. And over the town, we're stuck on the cliff tops. There was a little bay there, Charmouth. It's a nice, tiny little village, I suppose, holiday time, peace time. And right, there's a little short beach, a little narrow beach that way, a long beach that way, cliffs, and had these little bathing huts, just small ones along there, you know. They were locked, of course, but we had a pillbox on the beach here, and we mined the beach round there, the, you know, but there's cliffs right along there and that way. And D Company had a platoon on the high ground that side, and our platoon was this side. And out there's what they call Canary Ledges. When the tide was out, you could see it. And they built a pillbox on Canary Ledges. Oh, that was a great job. You got to turn at night time, you know. You got in there with two brand guns, about 20,000 rounds of ammunition, grenades and that. And a hell of a spot if there'd been a landing, you know what I mean? But if the Germans had tried to land, I mean, yeah. It could have really done some damage, but what an eerie bloody place. When the tide come in, you know, you cut off, you're out at sea. God almighty. And I had visions of this, you know. Time was getting, August was out, and it was coming into September and all that. And we were stuck there. And anyway, we used to put a section in the pill. There was a section on Canary Ledges, and then there was a section in this pillbox just below the cliff tops where our positions were. But we dug in, you know, good and proper and red, and this, that, and the other. So we had three sets of donut wire. It wasn't a steep cliff, you could get down. It was steep, like it wasn't a she, you know. You could get down, like, what a struggle at one thing or another. And in fact, we had a rope down where you could let you ease you down and help yourself up. And three sets of donut wire. The bloody squeals down the night. Each night the tide had been coming in a bit far. This night it come in, went right round the pillbox. Well, they broke like drowned rats, you know. Left the Bren guns in, I couldn't get them out. And next morning, the side of that was absolutely choked with sand. Had to dig every rubber out, and the Brens had to be stripped down. Spend hours cleaning and such as that, the ammunition and that. Of course, I never used the pillbox again, I couldn't, you say. Canary Ledge was still going, must have been a bit higher, but used to dread getting that job. But anyway, this was good, this. We had to dig extra positions. And again, we had a tent back from the cliff top. There was a little hole in the field that a marquee type, you know, were in there. And you keep your, if there was rainfall, keep your gear dry and such as that, your personal things and such as that. We dug all these positions. We had to dig extra ones for the Home Guard, local farm lads, you know. Big rosy feeling, great guys, you understand. So, right over, we got them up a couple of times to have a look at the positions, put them through, you're gone there, and that a sergeant and all, you know, right. So, I've done two or three stints coming up, and then the order was that we had a telephone back in the tent. If the phone went, they said Cromwell, it meant he was on his way. But we got Cromwell about 8 times in a fortnight, was starting a bit of a joke, you know. So, that'd be this night. It was absolutely pissing down. It was raining, I'm telling you. We'd had a long hot summer. But you had your gas caps on to keep driving. Of course, the alarm was there. You had to be on the cliff. You had to be in your positions, you know, like drowned rats. You had ground sheets over your brands and everything to keep them dry. And I was thinking, if them poor Germans are coming over there, the morale's going to be low before they get in. They're going to get some bloody stick, even if we haven't got artillery around. So the thing was, if you got... They got the dish night, you know, and this is true, they'll tell you over the phone, this is it, you know, okay. So it's right, the bloody rain's taming down. You had to send very lights up, I think red over green, over red or something, and the Home Guard blokes, they got ready and they left those little bits of warmth that come down. Well, it's turned up, you know, and the rain was there, this, that, the other. But he ironed it down. These poor lads are standing there. We were far from home, like, didn't make any difference. It was 1 o'clock in the morning, it was still raining. 2 o'clock in the morning, it was still raining, and someone was trying to smoke, put that cigarette out, you know, and all this crap. And the sergeant came along to Finney, it must have been 2 o'clock in the morning. He says, I don't think he'll come in this leg. He said, we're going home, I found out we're going to come back. That's true. Man, I didn't blame them. We had no office to go to, you know. There was no way they would have come over in that. They would have missed England anyway, and the song was really rain. They're great lads.
Did you train with them, other than just put them into position? Did you have to do any training with them?
No, they did their own training. But not until later on, do you want to get to where I went to Honiton Barracks?
We'll continue this a little bit longer.
Continue this side.
Did you have stand
two? Well, that is what should have happened like. And anyway, obviously the heat had died off, you know, say, and there was stand down like. The powers had been realised, you know. But we stood still 2 in the morning, mind, and last thing at night.
And that was every morning?
2 in the morning you stood down, and there was a Spitfire patrol. He used to come low down the coast, check and see what had happened. And he used to roll on, give you the thumbs up like. Every morning he was checking. He was doing the same them all right, then off he went. But you got bits of alarms about the village saying there's somebody flashing lights at night time, you know, for the German aircraft, which is a lot of bull, I can imagine. And anyway, a section would spend the night roaming around the little village, you know. Well, we found a dodgy little place for 2 old days in there, like you could drop in for a cup of tea and it's gone, you know. Down on the parachute. I think everybody was dropping in there, I'm pleased to say, you know. There was some people that were 2 old women, like, well, I'm saying all of them, so maybe only in the early 50s, but the world was. But they put the kettle on and make it at home, you know, a nice warm fire on and a couple of scones, like, that's it. They weren't all like that, as I said before, but I mean, on the coast, like, actually, it was difficult for them to. The heat had died off a bit. They gave us a motorcycle sidecar and a block out of transport to drive the bugger. And the thing was, there was a few German aircraft coming on. Some of ours, if there's a German aircraft come down, if you thought within a couple of miles you had to get there, any aircraft, to see what was happening, any survivors, pick them up, this, that, and the other. This morning, well, it's late morning, the bloody Spitfire come on. He must have been over Cherbourg. He's flying upside down. He's on fire underneath. His undercarriage or whatever was on fire. He just got over and he bailed out, you know. Well, I mean, that was probably about a couple of miles, 2.5 miles inland. So we went. Joe Ash was still alive. He lived down the road down. He was driving the motorbike. Went out with him. And breaking the monotony a bit. And anyway, the plane dropped about 2 fields away, blazing away, and the ammunition was popping off, and this lad was here, and he saw, he was as white as that box. He'd had half his foot shot away, his boat was all gone, you know. He was in dire straits, but he got back, like, you know, he'd been in a lot of pain. But we just stopped with him, in no time at all, there was an ambulance there, mine, picked him up, like, so come back. The little things, like, would. If it'd been a German, I don't know what we had to shout him or what, like, it was been a tough. I wouldn't tell anybody.
Was the equipment situation getting better? Was stuff coming through?
It was starting to get better then, yes, aye. I said we'd got our brand guns back, you know, and there's a certain amount of mortars coming back. Now, we weren't in the battalion headquarters in a village called Morecambe Lakes. That was just back from the coast. It wasn't far from us, really, like. But the battalion headquarters, you know, the equipment, we wouldn't really get to know each day what was there. But anyway, our next move from there, I think a 9th battalion come and took over, did they? No, we took over from a 9th, that's right. There's an Essex regiment, I think, the battalion took over from us, and we pulled out and went to Honiton Barracks in Devon. And anybody who doesn't know Honiton, they call it a town, like, which it's a long village, it's a local community centre. I think there's about 9 pubs, I think. You can't always count the pubs first, like. And So something like that anyway. Not a pretty little place, but you know. And the Devon's barracks, the Devon Regiment barracks was just about less than a mile outside there. Quite big wooden huts, you know, and all that, and tarmac drives, two big washhouses, two big gymnasiums. But the Devons wasn't training there. They had a small cater there, but a few NCOs, you know. But our company and support company took over the barracks, and the rifle companies were in the villages round about. And then we really did get down to hard training then. The carrier platoon had got the carriers, you know, the mortars had got the mortars, and the equipment was to be flown through, like, and it was one scheme after another, you know.
What date was your move? What date did you move to Honiton?
Yeah, I have no idea, to be honest. August, September, October, must have been October. Must have been maybe the back end of October, I would imagine, because the weather was getting a bit colder and colder, you know. And, of course, we had nice warm billets, mind, in there. And the weather was getting colder, that's right, I can remember. And I was still a full corporal. I didn't want promotion, like. But anyway, down to Audley Sergeant job with that Spike Jennings. Hey, there we are. Got to carry on. Well, as I say, we're doing intensive training schemes and all that. You're even doing individual platoon schemes, you know. The dead of night and such as that. You send somebody out such and such a place, give you the mic presence. You had to stalk it. You had to get there without being detected as near as you could and storm it and such as that, like. That was all good training, they were all fit as fire.
Did you follow the same training as the rest of them, or was your training different with being this anti-aircraft role?
We were still following, in the barracks, we were still carrying out the anti-aircraft role. No, we only had one Bren gun, there was a big barrack square, you know, and one corner was a big sandbag emplacement. We had one Bren in there, we had a labour section in there each day, you know. But the rest of the time, you joined in with the rifle companies. And when they won a scheme, you went with them. And I found out more and more they were using as groundwork. And they showed us anti-tank rifles. We got the useless weapon, like, but we got the anti-tank rifles.
Just the boys' rifle?
The boys' anti-tank rifle. They weren't very good, but we had to learn to use them. And you did a supporting role with rifle companies on the flank or such as that, you know. All these schemes was quite good. You got to know what was happening with the rifle companies and such as that. And the Doe Battalion scheme, how far would be off the coast? Weren't that far. 8 mile, 9 mile or something like that. And there was an imaginary enemy there, like put other troops as the enemy, you know. And yet they'd come in from the sea, and you had to get down there and shove the buggers back into the sea, like it was, and all that, like. But anyway, in between times, you carried out your normal duties, those guard duties and such as that, you know. And Spike Jennings being what he is, so. Cops for guard duty. I've done it a few times, though, and the lads were quite smart, mind. If you're on guard, they'd let you have a day off, or afternoon off the day before. They used to sit up half the night polishing the bayonet cap and such as that. Yeah, you know, that was really, give it the due. Votes was exactly and such as that, and really smart. Whereas cop for guard was about in the middle of the week, the children had nobody about, you know. They haven't done any money, was down in Hunting Village. They haven't done, was lying in there. And anyway, the hardly officer used to parade outside the guard, outside the village at the top, in the wash house. And there was only a few hundred yards, you know, down to the guard room. So the hardly officer would have a look after you up there. And then he would go and leave, you know. He used to pick a stick man out. You know, there was one odd stick man. But Kit Athey, he wasn't very bright. He was about my heart, but he was a smart lad. He even had lovely teeth, you know. And he was as smart as a carrot, Kit. And he used to always get stick man, he got the bugger again. So, right, sets him off, left, right, nobody there, you know, quite smart. Who should come on the scene with Spike? This is type Spike was, you know. He's a dry comedian, but oh my God. All those men, Corporal. He had a bit of a lisp, you know, but all those men. Go on, open them. Open out of march. Well, he went round and looked at no perfect, you know, let's be fair, starting with myself. He gets to Kit, he's stick man Kit, he's looking round Kit. He says to Kit, he says, how long have you been a tramp? Kit never flicked, he says, since I joined the Durham Light Infantry, he says, put him on a charge, corporal, why? Old Humpty Graymore was company commander. March said, it's duty, you know, and it Wilson Ackley Service, some kind of remarks to the, you know. So, what have you got to say? Archie says, I told the truth, sir. And Graham was trying to keep me laughing. Spike was looking there like, you know, murder in his eyes. He says, what we getting now on these drafts, I don't know. Kit had been with him, he'd been in France, you know. He said, what we getting on these drafts, sir, I don't know. He said, they're sending all the rubbish they can get hold of. He said, where did you train that? I said, the Spennymoor, sir. Yeah. He says, who trained you? He said, you did, sir. Well, Graham nearly fell off there. He's making all, he wanted to say to Arthur, get out, you know. He said, no, look, Arthur, you'll have to try and make a better job in future, like, but I mean, the bloody lad. But that was Spike, you know. Hey, great. Another morning, I always dropped for it. Hardly sergeant again with two stripes up. Sick parade, first thing in the morning. That was a cold, damp, oh, it was a bitter morning. Coming from the village, the rifle company said, now, why, they're coming in at 1,500 weight. Three from that company, three, four from that and all that. Hey, when I got a look at them, I could have cried. Some had scarves on, some had greatcoats on, some had gym shoes on, some had knout on their heads. You know, I said, no, like it. God, I've seen. Please don't let Spike get down here, Paul. I said, that medical room was on here. I was just getting them. Oh, the voice. Stop those men there. And when he got a look round, he's looking around, a breathless hush, you know. I said, it'll come here. I was trying not to laugh. He comes back to me. He says, what is it, Corporal? A full expedition. They'll start to laugh, you know. Oh, right. He sent all the buggers back to the companies, a lot of them. I said, well, they'll miss sick parade there. He says, that's awful, isn't it? He says, and each one, he says, tell your company sergeant majors, I want to see them in my quarters at 2 o'clock this afternoon. So he'd give them a ride. Bullying. They're little things now, but it might sound little stupid things, but it's the type of bloke he was. But he had them on the tours. He had. Oh, my God. Aye. You'd have a battalion parade, you know, occasionally, drilling them all, you know, one thing, another. Putting sort of place in. One particular day, calls everybody to halt. They're all full rank NCOs and warrant officers to fall out. Tell them, you know, already. And he was telling the battalion, he says, you better without that lot. And the boys are enjoying that, you know. Little things like, but anyway, in between time, and I suppose it filled the time in. Then we.
You were doing quite heavy training. Did you train with other units, other regiments, Royal Artillery
and so forth? We did a couple of schemes, one big one in particular. We didn't train with the artillery mind, not field firing exercise, touch of that. But they were part of it. I mean, I think the time factor was there. They would all be doing their own training, like. And went up on to Exmoor, and it was quite a trek up there. And it was a whole divisional scheme, you know. The whole division was up there, like, spread over Exmoor. And we stopped at Barnstable first, and a bloody big market there. Concrete floor, no doors on there, and the lads were sleeping, they were all sleeping in there. And we moved up onto Exmoor. We just got nice up on Exmoor, spread out all over the place, you know. And luckily we were out platoon and one or two more in it, right out in the sticks, you know. A bloody big farm, you know, barns and everything, like. And battalion headquarters was strung round there, and the snow fell. Christ. Must have been about 3 or 4 foot of snow, you know. And some of them up there for 2 or 3 weeks. Eventually, when they could, that they call this game off. But anyway, we're up there and we were doing well with rabbits and such as that, like, you know, rabbit pie and all that. And we, at that time, we used to give you. You didn't get a rum ration as such, but I've told people about it and they laugh at me as though it's so much stupid. The cooks used to make big dixies of cocoa and pour the rum in. Rum and cocoa. Hey, what a drink. Go straight to your toes. You know, I said, beautiful. Aye. I've never tried it since, but just several times the we had it like rum and cocoa. Don't much, but a great drink. Mm-hmm. Don't know the thought of it. But anyway, the rum was started again. We've gone to India. We're going anywhere but the Middle East, like, you know. And I think they set these rooms away on purpose. And we've got old Carty Drill, you know, got issued with that, like.
So that would confirm the rumours that you were going to a hot place.
We're going, you're definitely going, you know, say. But we got a Christmas came, and it was staggered, like. We had quite a lot of Scotsmen, was we got from the Scottish border and such as that. So the British, the English, Nagin have got Christmas, a week of Christmas, and Scottish, plus a lot of, I was one of them, we got New Year. It was a matter of the luck of the draw, and we got New Year at home, like, you know.
Had you felt that the training you were doing, having met the Germans, of course, already in France, had you felt the training you were doing was really making you better soldiers, that you could face them? You felt you could face them?
Without a doubt, like, you know. You were getting to know your weapons more intimately, and you don't fail firing and such as that, you know. Out in the sticks in the Devon, there's one place where the rifle companies went through, and we had actually, up on the high ground, this Colonel Beard took us out, me and Frankie Trotter, he was platoon sergeant. And there was target, the airman targets over there, a bit on the high ground, you know. And that to go through assault manoeuvres, the companies, like, one at a time, and attacking this and attacking that. There was dummies up for bait and all that. And we were firing bursts over the head, you know, to make it more realistic, without being told any of them, like. And that sort of thing. And then you've got grenade training and such as that, you know. We start to get bakelite grenades, there's no shrapnel in them, like. But a great entertainment value, you know, and you did a little course on them and know about them. And I mean, all you do is screw the top off like one of these aerosol tops. And you had a little bobbin there with a split pin in, the ends closed. There was a tape round it like that. It was lead weight on the end. You looked at it, I wonder if it worked, but it worked every time. You threw it, and the lead weight unwound the tape, and time had got with about 3-4 seconds, what have you, pulled it out, down went the plunge, and your grade went off. But there was no shrapnel, like, but the hell of a bang, you know. And if there were mugs, if they hadn't seen you, you could be standing in open, you know, demonstrating, telling them all about it, you know, saying that all it happens, like, screw the top off, there's nothing to be afraid of. You see that lead weight takes it out, and then you just throw it about 20 yards away, you know. Bang, everybody gets the deck. Bang, like, you know. But short-range weapon, I mean, the German stick grenade was the same. There was no shrapnel, but demoralised, and if it dropped between your legs, the concussion would kill you, like. But in a confined space.
Was the training extended order training, or was it fire and movement for the rifle platoons, rifle companies?
Well, you got a lot, like. They give you as much as they could, like, you know. And you got all kinds of lectures and all in between and such as that.
What kind
of course, we're trained as a motorised unit and all, you know. You did a lot of motorised training, like how to get off under fire, which applied greatly in the desert, like it wouldn't happen in a country road. It would, but it was more difficult. I mean, as soon as there's aircraft alarm, the truck stopped, two sections dived over the side, this section run this way, you went out about 20, 30, 40 yards, lay on your back, rifles, friends, whatever, Tommy guns and all, if you had them, and if the aircraft come down, you all fired at once, like, and that sort of thing happened. That was quite good, you know, and you got to the state, you got interested, like. But we got an embarkation leave. I think it was about April. We got a week's embarkation leave, the whole battalion.
How did you feel when you knew you were going abroad again? What were your own personal feelings? Were you looking forward to it?
Well, I'd just been married, and I didn't worry about it, like. You didn't worry, obviously, didn't worry, but you knew that everybody was in the same boat, like. Yes, sir, and you promised to be true, and the wife promises to be true, and all this, which she was, like, and I wasn't. But I suppose that's the sort of thing. I was a good lass, like. But I was lucky that way. And I can't remember being depressed, like. There was the apprehension. There was a challenge in front of you somehow, was there? There was a challenge, you see? And in the back of your mind, you thought, well, the mere fact that they send us abroad to fight, it means our own country isn't in jeopardy, like.